Blue Blood Blues from Jack White, live at Third Man Records. It's a 2-album set, and when I say album, I mean album. And there are many great musicians on that record, but one of them is our guest this evening, Bryn Davies. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
So you played bass on this album.
I did. Well, half of it.
Yeah. Well, let's go back and explain. I cannot think of any parallel where an act switches bands every other night. Explain what happened.
Okay. So when we were making the record, I don't think any of us really even knew we were making the record. Jack just, you know, brought all these musicians in and was saying, like, I just want to try out new material and blah, blah, blah. We came in there in and out for about 6 months. And a couple months later, he asked us to go on tour and said there was going to be a record. And you know, we were all kind of blindsided. Like, oh, okay. That's awesome. But a lot of times when we were in the studio, it would be all girls or all guys on a certain song. Some of it was a mix, but when he decided to do the tour, he wanted to have an all-girl band and an all-guy band, and he wanted it to be spontaneous which one was going to be playing. So we had, like, you know, a route of shows, like 3 or 4 weeks out every couple months, you know. But we never knew which band was playing on which night, which was fun and exciting for the fans. They never knew what they were going to get. And we weren't allowed to talk about anything on social media. Even when we did Saturday Night Live, we couldn't announce it because he didn't want anything, you know, any of the surprise to be revealed. Because Saturday Night Live was actually the big reveal when the girls played the first song and the guys played the second song. And that was his kind of like coming out to the world. This is going to be my tour this year.
Did it ever happen where you would do 2 nights in a row and 2 nights off? Or was it predictable in any sense?
No, it was not predictable, which ended up being disappointing sometimes because, you know, if you had family or friends in a certain town and you're like, we're coming and I'm not playing,
I'll be at the hotel.
Yeah. Well, we would always go. Always wanted us to go. And I went for as long as my big old pregnant belly could stand it. Towards the 6th and 7th month, I was staying at the hotel a lot when I wasn't absolutely needed.
So you were pregnant on this tour.
I was. I found out I was pregnant a month before I got the offer. And I got the offer via email, and I called up the road manager, and I said, hey, Lalo, guess what? And he said, all right, well, let me talk to Jack, and we'll figure it out, and we'll call you back. And he called back, and he said, Jack says you're the girl he wants, and he'll take you as long as he can have you. So if you can do it for 6 months, let's do it for 6 months. So I was on that tour. We started rehearsals in January, and I left the road. Our last tour ended in June, and I had the baby in August.
You know, if I were the tour accountant, you know, I would probably go, you know, Jack, this is a great idea. It's an artistic idea. This is kind of not that feasible. Were there any kinks in that system other than, you know, people missing out on seeing you in certain cities? Or?
No, I mean, as far as I know, it was just something that he really wanted to do as an artist. He had a vision for it. He's a very aesthetic person. As you could tell, like, each project he does has a different color scheme, and he sticks with it. Like, the white stripes were black, white, and red. Certain other projects he's done have been, you know, like black and other colors, but this one was black, white, and powder blue. We had a stylist who dressed us and, you know, found clothes for us to wear. And the girl guy thing, I think, was something as an artist he wanted to experience how different the energy could be playing the same material with an all-male band and an all-female band backing you up. And it was something where he was just like dead set, if I'm ever going to do this, I'm just going to do it now. I've got the musicians. I'm in Nashville. I've got my pick of all these great people. So let's just do it and
Was there competition between the male and female bands? Like, you know, we nail this song a little better than the males, you know?
Of course. Absolutely.
And you guys were the best, right?
The girls, highly, yes.
Yeah. Was there a count at the end of the tour who played the most shows?
I don't know. I don't think so. He ended up splitting it up pretty evenly. But we would be on the bus, you know, most of us sleeping. Me, I never slept on that tour. I was just up every couple hours because I was pregnant. But we would get a text at 11 in the morning, every morning, saying girls or guys. And that's how we knew. There was one show I remember, I think it was for Hangout Fest, where I was sitting there and I was like, man, I haven't gotten to play in 3 nights and I'm leaving and this is my last chance to play a festival with Jack and I really want to play. And so they actually were very sweet and accommodating and they realized that that was my last festival that we were going to do. And so they let us play half the set. So it was pretty cool. Jack was just great to work for.
So what do you have next for us?
All right. So next, I would love to delve into some Guy Clark because we lost our incredible force. That's how I described him yesterday in my little Facebook memorial. He is just an incredible force of a man. But we lost Guy yesterday, and I know this is pre-taped, so it's not.
Right. Yeah. But we are taping this the day after he passed away. And
yeah,
there are very few songwriters out there that have so much across the board respect from other, not just songwriters, but musicians and music fans. It's hard to find anybody that doesn't have at least some, you know, base level of high respect, if not way higher.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What song are you going to?
So this song, Hemingway's Whiskey, and I brought you a present.
Yeah? Some whiskey?
These are the handwritten lyrics that Guy wrote out. I kept all of my lyric sheets and all of my chord charts from every single session I did with Guy Clark, and I'm on his last four records. So I kept all that. I made a copy of that for you.
Wow. Did he have these lyrics out while you were playing?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
This is awesome. He's got really nice handwriting.
He does. He does. He's got the best handwriting.
I was like, are you sure that he was a musician? Yeah. Well, let's listen to it.
Whiskey, warm and smooth and mean, even when it burns, it'll always finish clean. He did not like it watered down, he took it straight up and neat. It was bad enough for him, you know it's bad enough for me. Hemingway's whiskey. Oh, it's tough out there, a good news is hard to find. Living one word to the next, one line at a time. Now there's more to life than whiskey, there's more to words than rhyme. Sometimes nothing works, sometimes nothing shines like Hemingway's whiskey. For him, Hemingway's whiskey, warm and smooth and mean. Even when it burns, it'll always finish clean. He did not like it watered down. He took it straight up and neat. If it was bad enough for him, you know it's bad enough for me. Hemingway's whiskey.
Bryn Davies is our guest on this evening's Flipside. She has an absolutely amazing career. One thing I've noticed about all the groups you've played bass for and sang with as well is that it's almost iconic, the type of artist you play with. The first track was Jack White, and now this, you know. And this tune, this Guy Clark tune in particular, is almost an iconic piece of music.
Absolutely. I was delving through all of my stuff last night, and I knew I wanted to bring in, you know, a couple from Guy, and I was trying to find like the quintessential perfect Guy Clark song to that just like speaks of who he is, and not only as a writer but how he lived his life, and that, you know, of course, Live Hard, Die Hard, this one's for him, like, love you, buddy. That's, yeah.
But he still managed to weather all the storms, and he had a pretty long life, really.
He did.
What was he like just hanging out and playing music?
Guy was one of those guys, you know, this might sound weird. There's like the two kind of camps of older men that I played with. The camp that was like, oh, it's a girl, that'll be cool, you know, and they're flirty and they're weird, and then they get over it after a while. And then there's the camp that starts out just being respectful and awesome, like Sam Bush was one of those guys, and Bela has always been very respectful and nice, and Guy always just really, really was incredibly respectful and you know, admired what I did. And when I moved to Nashville, it wasn't, I don't know, a year later when he called me up one morning and said, "Hey, Brent, you want a job? I'm making a record." Because that's when I was at festivals, it was always him and Verlin. But if I was at a festival, I'd sit in with him, you know, here and there. And if I was there and he knew I was there, I'd get a call at my hotel room in the morning. "You want a job?" So that's how we started playing together. And then I played on that first record, which was Workbench Songs. And then every record that he did until he died, I've been on since then.
Is that how it sounds like this is how you got all your work? Because you just sort of just happened to be somewhere and said, "Hey, you want a gig?" It doesn't sound like you were out, like, bugging people and tracking them down and harassing them with tapes. Or am I wrong?
I did go to a Peter Rowan show. This was my first professional job out of college. I went to a Peter Rowan show in Austin, Texas. I got him a drink at the bar, and I said, "You need me to play bass for you." And he was intrigued. He said,
"Did you get that gig?"
I did. I played with Peter Rowan and Tony Rice and the Peter Rowan Tony Rice Quartet for 8 years.
You're listening to Flipside. This is Todd Steed with Bryn Davies, our guest this evening. What is your next selection?
The next song is actually also a Guy Clark song. But as you know, when songwriters write their songs in Nashville, they do it at a publishing house, at a meeting that's been set up by their publishers. And when they're done writing, they make a demo of the song for the publishers to play for the Kenny Chesneys and others that they want to cut their song. So this is one of those sessions, but it's pretty darn special because these songwriting sessions I did with Guy Clark are from one summer where he was just recording everything that he wrote with Chris Stapleton, Jed Hughes, Verlin Thompson, Sean Camp. So all of those people were the band. This is a song written by Guy Clark and Chris Stapleton. And I believe the band is me, Sean Camp, Verlin Thompson, Chris Stapleton, and Eddie Bayers on drums, and Jed Hughes on electric guitar.
And I bet you were the only Berklee graduate.
I think I was.
Ever had a blues on a fine spring day? Well, that's a real hard card to play. Nothing to do, nothing to say, but just listen to the wind blow. It kind of goes. Ever met a girl on a Saturday night? Wind up dancing in the pale moonlight. It's all good, hey, it's all right, 'cause you're sizzling with a little kiss. Kinda feels like this. Shot horse come in, you get the feeling you were born to win. Makes you want to ante up and do it again, so you throw all your money down. Kind of makes this sound. Push it just a little too far. Makes you forget about who you are. Keep both hands on the wheel. Kind of feel.
Both hands on the wheel, indeed. You are listening to Flipside. Todd Steed, along with Bryn Davies, who, where were you actually born? I was,
Livermore, California.
Where is that?
It's it's east of the Bay Area, just a little bit. It's not in the Central Valley, but it's in a little valley in between the Bay Area and the Central Valley.
And then from there to Berklee, mm-hmm. Nashville was sort of your home base?
Nashville,
Austin,
yeah, Austin for 7 years, and then Nashville for 7 years, and now here.
Now you're in Knoxville. As a native, it's almost like obligatory. But how? Just tell me how much you love Knoxville. No, what's it? I mean, Austin. That's a hard act to follow, and Berklee, and
yeah, I didn't enjoy Boston. Sorry, all you.
Red Sox fans.
Oh, you Red Sox fans.
Or whatever you are.
Or Massachusetts Boston fans. I don't know. Do those exist?
I don't know.
I didn't enjoy it, especially like coming straight from California when I was 18. It was a very, very hard like culture shock kind of thing to get out of. And I never settled in there at all. I felt much more comfortable in Austin. But there again, Austin, it takes you kind of 14 hours to get anywhere.
Yeah.
when you're dead set in the middle of Texas. Nashville was great. It's much more centrally located. But when I met my sweet husband, Vince, I was ready to settle down a little bit from touring life. And I just didn't really tell anybody at first that I moved out of Nashville. So I still got calls and still got work. And that lasted until I had my kid and people realized I didn't live there anymore. But now I'm back in school.
Well, see, that's the cool thing about, you know, your phone. You don't have to change area code. So you can tell people wherever you are. They won't know.
They didn't know.
When bass players marry, there's a song title that no one will take me up on ever.
There's a reason, Todd.
I challenge them anyway. So do you guys sit around at dinner and talk about, you know, basses?
Sometimes. Sometimes. My husband, he's very much into like bass players and jazz players and gear and all that kind of stuff. And I'm kind of like, I just like to play, you know. That's the only way to get my sweet introverted husband to come out of his shell is to talk about bass stuff.
So you haven't answered my question about what is it like for Knoxville? It has to be a little bit of a drop off in excitement. Of course, you have a baby, but
right, yeah. Well, I absolutely love Knoxville. I think I didn't realize how ready I was to kind of get out of the hustle and bustle of Nashville until I landed here. And the music scene here is so chill and accepting and wonderful. And you don't feel like you're in competition for like always having to go out and network and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you know, I moved here and people found out I was here and I get local work all the time. Whether or not I can do it is, but I love it. I love being this close to the mountains. I love the cost of living here.
So now you've got the baby,
mm-hmm.
and you've got school,
mm-hmm.
and I still see you out playing, and I saw you recently playing out, and you played some with Scott Miller, you know, with Raina Gellert.
Mm-hmm.
That, and by the way, in case any of Scott's people are listening, and I know he's got people listening, that's my favorite lineup. I've heard all the lineups. I've ruined a few. But I love the lineup with you three. There's something about it's not too much, it's not too little, you know. It's just very, very nice.
I love that lineup. I really love playing with Scott, and I adore playing with Raina. She, you know, I've played with Raina in many incarnations of many different things, and but playing with her with Scott is amazing and fun. And yes, I've been playing with Scott Miller when I have time. I've been playing a little bit here in town with Red Shoes and Rosin.
Yeah, that's all you got at the Open Streets.
Yeah. I'm doing some dates with Daryl Scott this summer.
So you don't find it too stressful to balance all this stuff, or how do you fit
it
all in?
I don't work a lot during the semester. I am a nuclear engineering major.
Of course. That's what I was going to guess.
So that is that and a 4-year-old and a husband in the house is demanding enough without working part time. I don't do a lot of stuff outside of Knoxville during the semester. But summers, I'm trying to still do music. I don't think I will ever not do music, but trying to balance is hard.
Excellent. Well, Bryn Davies, what a treat to finally have you down.
Thank you, Todd.
What are we going to finish off with? What's our finale?
So our finale, it's funny, we were talking about Nashville. Our finale is a live cut of Daryl Scott and I in 2010, live at Eddie's Attic in Atlanta. It's a duo, just Daryl Scott and I, and we... this is Heartbreak Town, and he wrote that about his move to Nashville when he was a young pup.
Mm-hmm. friends kissed your mama goodbye. Baby in your arms and a tear in your eye. 1,200 miles and you never asked why from me. Me and the baby and you side by side. We all knew we'd end for a long, hard ride. Nowhere to run and nowhere to hide, it seemed. We honked the horn when we crossed the state line. Woke up the baby and she started to cry. She must have known what we were gonna find. This ain't nothing but a heartbreak town. Square people in a world that's round, and they watch you dancing without the sound. It ain't nothing. Oh, it ain't nothing. Nothing at all. You take your number and you stand in line, and they watch to see how high you're gonna climb. Pat on the back, better luck next time.